Good morning.
Good morning.
Spring has sprung. Well, it did, and then it ran away. But then it'll surely be back. That's the one thing, one of the things we can be guaranteed, that spring will be back. It'll arrive at a moment not too soon for us creatures of warmth and beauty and the colors that spring promises. Today we focus on the question, why we need spring. And you may have noticed that there's an extra S on spring. Well, if you haven't noticed, you will. So we need multiple springs to scare away the winter that's persisting. So while spring is always thought of as a season of birth and renewal, all seasons bring both new life and the finality of death. However, today we explore renewal that spring symbolically and actually represents. My name is Mark Clark, and I'm your convener for this morning. And welcome to the United Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan. We are a welcoming congregation. Whether you seek religious freedom or freedom from religion, you are welcome here. Regardless of your sexual orientation or gender identity, you are a vital member of this community. We do not exclude anyone for their racial or ethnic heritage, their age, ability, or education. We only ask that you respect one another according to the 7 principles listed on the back of your bulletin. To summarize, inclusion, freedom, and peace rule here. Can you light the chalice? Yeah.
Sure.
As we light the chalice, consider the words of John Burroughs, the noted naturalist and essayist. To find the universal elements enough, to find the air and water exhilarating, to be refreshed by a morning walk or an evening saunter, to be thrilled by the stars at night, to be elated over a bird's nest or a wildflower in spring. These are some of the rewards of a simple life. Our opening hymn this morning is number 61, Lo, the Earth Awakes Again. So please stand as you're able. I have a single announcement this morning. The UUFM choral director requests that choir members meet him near the baby grand piano after the service. Okay? No. Now it's time for joys and concerns.
May I make an announcement?
Oh, sure. Sorry.
Hi, I'm Tom Phillips. I have the pleasure and
great privilege. Half of that's a lie. Anyway, to be the no, yeah, just it's not 100%. To be the chair this year, and I do want to make you aware of this insert. Valuable paper was used to create this, but the message on it, on one side, both sides are really important. In the middle of April, April 11th to 13th, a weekend, we are having the first ever Mid-America region meeting of Unitarian Universalists of America. Okay, if there's any polity at all to Unitarians, you might feel it here. Okay, they're not our bosses; they don't make us do anything. But it's going to be an outstanding program, and the fact that it's written means that it must be true that the Social Action Committee is offering scholarships to attend. There's going to be lots of really interesting workshops, and I think one of the high points is going to be a very legal test of our First Amendment right to have a march from the Ramada Hotel to the Capitol with various messages that are important for social justice. But closer to home, another matter of polity, of rules, if there are any, is our annual meeting of this congregation, Sunday, April 27th, and you might get to vote on something that's really important. That's it. Sorry.
Thanks, Tom. Okay. So now it's time for joys and concerns, and if you would please wait for the microphone before you begin speaking, since we are recording this.
How a joy I saw Kai and her family at the movie theater. We were watching Lego.
Shirley Hobrock, this is pertaining to the conference. If you're going and you would be willing to volunteer just a little bit for a little time slot, would you please see me, because I'm signing up volunteers. Thank you.
Jim Chanteau. Had some sad news last night. My aunt, the last of my mother's generation, died. Her name was Josephine Marie Wolfe. She lived 92 years.
I'm subbing for Kathleen Oldfather, my wife, who is the caring chair. Lots of things going on there. I've seen quite a bit of Kathleen lately, but not as much as I normally do because she's been gone to visit people who are going through one or another kind of health problem, dealing with it. And Alice Stockwell is probably not any better, maybe worse than the last time Kathleen communicated to you. She's just, anyway, not doing very well in the hospital. And she's had one more message from Kathy Hedge that her mother's condition has stabilized, and they're optimistic, but see a kind of a long pull ahead of her.
And I do have a concern to share. Kathy Hedge, who was supposed to be convening this morning, unfortunately her mother had a stroke. Her mother lives in California. So Kathy traveled out there, of course, to help. And I haven't heard anything since about the time she left, but hopefully things are going better for them. So for those joys voiced today and those only known to one or a few, we rejoice with you. For those concerns and sadnesses shared with us, and for those held in private, we offer support and thoughts of well-being. And now it's time for the story of all ages, and today we have a doubleheader, actually, which is pretty exciting, with Sylvia and Dick Beeman starting us off, and then followed by Pat Embers and her friend Jean Underwood.
Any helpers for story time? Story time, story time. Logan, you want to come? Come on. Well, does anyone know what was a really special thing that happened last Thursday on March 20th? What?
Spring break.
Spring! Oh, yeah?
After my birthday.
Oh, well, that's good, too. I'm glad you were born. And a late happy birthday. It was the first day of... Boing! Yeah, spring! Have you noticed any signs of spring?
Other than the snow.
Yes.
Robins.
The robins, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, they're back to stay.
Yeah, we recently from our, around our house.
Lots of birds. Anything else?
And
oh, cardinals and what?
And robins. We just only found those two around.
Yeah, I've noticed there are lots of cardinals this year. Anything else anyone else noticed? Have you noticed when you look up in the branches of the trees that they have a little bit of color because their buds are starting to swell? And I'll tell you this really weird thing I saw when I was walking my dog in the schoolyard near my house. It was right after the snow melted a couple weeks ago, and I looked down on the ground, and every few inches there was a little hole in the ground. And I was thinking, what is that? And then one of my daughters told me that Native Americans called this time we're in, March, they called it Worm Moon, because that's when the worms come out of the ground so the robins can eat them. And it was really quite amazing, so you guys will have to look at the ground after this little snow melts. Well, Native Americans, like many people around the world, used to keep track of the year by counting how many times the moon went around the earth. And the moon goes around the earth about 12 and a half times a year. And so each, they call one time it goes around the earth is called a moon. It's kind of like our month, and it's 28 and a half days. And so the first time the moon goes around in the deep of winter, corresponding to what we call January, that's what they called the moon of the howling wolves. And that's when the wolves are really hungry, they're starving, and so they're howling. And then the second time the moon goes around the earth, they called that hunger moon, and that's when the people were really hungry. And then the third time it went around, that's worm moon. And then each time it goes around has a different name. But I'm going to tell you a story today that happened in hunger moon. And did you bring your drums? I need my drum for this story. Did you guys bring your drums? Well, of course you did. Can you play your drums just a little bit? That's Pat's drum. That's a special drum. Okay, at the end of the story, I'll need you to help me play your drums. So you can sit up like this on your legs or any way that's comfortable. So once, long, long ago, during the time of the hunger moon, two Native American young men went out into the prairie to find some food for their people. They took their bows and arrows, and they weren't having any luck at all, and they were very hungry themselves. In fact, they were all starving. And then all of a sudden, in front of them appeared a beautiful woman all dressed in white buckskin. And the really strange thing was that she seemed to float above the ground. Her moccasins never touched the earth at all. And so the first young man, he wanted to capture her and take her back with him. She was so lovely and unusual. And the second young man said, oh no, she might be a spirit. We should be respectful toward her. But the first young man, he didn't agree, and he tried to grab her. And suddenly, a great black cloud arose and surrounded him. And then the lightning flashed, and the thunder boomed. And when the mist cleared, all that was left was a pile of dry bones where the first young man had stood. The second young man was horrified, and he was so scared. And he said to the spirit woman, I'll do anything you want. How can I help you? And she said, go back to your village, and I will visit you and your people. Prepare for my visit, and I will give you gifts. So he went back to the village, and they made ready for her. And later, toward night, she appeared, and they gave her the place of honor to sit inside the largest teepee. And she pulled from out of her sleeve a pipe. She showed it to the people. The stem of the pipe is made out of plant material. That's to remind you that Mother Nature provides you many wonderful plants to sustain you. And the bowl of the pipe is made out of red clay. That's to remind you that your bodies are made of flesh and bone. And when you've lit the pipe, the smoke that comes out of the pipe, those are your hopes and dreams. And they'll float up and they'll find me wherever I am, and I will answer your prayers. And the feathers on the pipe, those are to remind you that there is beauty everywhere, and we are very lucky to live in this world. And she taught them how to do ceremonies with the pipe. And she taught them how to show their gratitude to Father Sky, Mother Earth, and the four directions, south, west, north, and east. And then she gave them the pipe. She also gave them corn, and she taught them how to grow, plant and grow the corn, and how to make things to eat out of it. And she also gave them pemmican and showed them how to make it, which is, pemmican is a mixture of fat and pounded meat, dried meat, and berries. It's kind of like Native American energy food. And then she got up to leave, and she walked off into the distance, off to the horizon, until they could hardly see her. And then she fell to the ground, and she rolled in the dirt. And when she stood up, she had turned into a black buffalo. And then she fell to the ground again, and she stood up. And this time she was a brown buffalo. And again she fell to the earth. And this time when she stood up, she was a red buffalo. One more time she fell to the earth and rolled around in the dirt. And when she stood up this time, she was a white buffalo calf. The people watched in amazement. And then she walked far, far off into the horizon so they couldn't see her anymore. The next morning when the people woke up, they heard a rumbling sound. What could that be? The sky was completely clear. It wasn't going to rain or storm. Where are your drums? Can you play your drums? The sound got louder and louder and louder, and a great cloud of dust rose above the whole village. And then it stopped. And then finally the dust settled down, and the people saw, to their amazement, they were surrounded by thousands and thousands of buffaloes spread across the prairie in every direction as far as they could see. The buffalo would provide them meat, and the buffalo would provide fur and their hides to make their teepees and to make blankets and their clothing. And their bones, out of their bones, they would make tools. And after that, as long as the buffalo herds were there, the Native American people would never be starving again. Thanks for helping me.
Each right now, she and I. And we'll start here. Yes. Is this on? I guess it is. Okay, we'll be up there in a minute. Okay. We are now going to do a spring equinox and spring season smudging. And smudging means that we burn sage, tobacco, sweetgrass, cedar, and there's cornmeal, and there's sacred ashes from all my previous smudgings. And we're going to welcome spring in the four directions, and actually the six directions, because we start with the Great Spirit and the Earth Mother, and then we'll go around the four directions. And I would like to ask if everyone would stand, if they are able, and turn with us, and I will tell you where to turn, and you can just look at us and know where to turn. We welcome the Great Spirit, the giver of life. And we welcome Mother Earth, also the giver of life to us. And we face the south. In the south, we welcome the summer, the home of the coyote, the time of our young adulthood, and the time of daytime. And this is the direction that starts and is the quadrant of our emotional well-being. And to the west, everybody please face the west. The west is the home of the grizzly bear, the chief of the four directions, because the grizzly bear is able to heal itself. And it is also the time of the evening, of our middle age, of the fall, and it is the direction of spiritual well-being. And to the north, the home of the white buffalo. It is the time of winter, old age and elders, the time of night, and it is the direction of physical well-being. And to the east, the home of the eagle, in which is the spring, the youth and children, the time of the morning, and the direction of mental well-being. The congregation may be seated now. And yeah, go ahead and take that outside. We'll have a little bit of transition. And what we're going to do is say a poem and have drums, which is the heartbeat, and have rattles, which is the spirit of our message. I want to mention that this buffalo skull is right now loaned to me from a dear friend, Charlie Smyes, who has a buffalo herd in Cortland and has had it for 30 years, and this is one of his buffalo. And this buffalo came from the Lakota herd and is from the same relative family as one of the original white buffaloes that was born in the Lakota Nation. And I feel an honor to be able to have this for my medicine. Well, he loaned it to me for a year, and then there's another one that he's going to give me, because this is his prize buffalo. This is one that has been... Everything is natural on his farm in terms of how he raises, and when they die, he lets them die naturally, and, you know, the whole thing. So it's very special and for me to be able to have this to use with you today, and by sheer chance, yesterday he showed up at my house. He comes like every year or two and visited, because he was in town for a Kansas Prairie buffalo meeting. So we had a wonderful visit, and I did this poem for him and talked to him about that. So right now, what we're going to do is, the poem is very short, and we will combine it with the drum, the heartbeat, and the rattles. And I've asked Dick and Sylvia and two kids to do the rattles for us. So they will give four long rolls on the rattle, and then you will do the four drum beats. So go ahead and give your four long rolls on the rattle for spirits. I rise, I rise, I, whose tread makes the earth rumble. I rise, I, in whose thighs is strength. I rise, who whips his back with his tail when in rage. I rise, in whose humped shoulder is power. I rise, who shakes his mane when angered. I rise, I, whose horns are sharp and curved. Rattles and drums together.
Now listen to the words of Sitting Bull, who died in 1890. He was a Hunkpapa Lakota holy man who led his people as a tribal chief during their years of resistance to the United States government. And he's known to say, "Behold, my friends, the spring has come. The earth has gladly received the embraces of the sun, and we shall soon see the results of their love."
for those of you who don't know me, my name's Bob Patterson, and I was asked by the convener at the time to choose and read a couple of poems about spring, and I guess I was the one who didn't say no. I've chosen two by Ted Kooser, our neighbor to the north. He lives in the vicinity of Lincoln. He's a former poet laureate of the United States and now lives in semi-genteel retirement in Nebraska. The first of them is Mother, and it's an apostrophe, in this case, an address to someone who's not present. In this case, his recently deceased mother. And it's probably safe to assume that in this particular poem, there's an identity between the speaker and the poet, Ted Kooser. So we'll begin with that. And the reason, this is probably now my favorite Mother's Day poem, and I know we're not near Mother's Day yet, but it also contains some very, very powerful images about spring. So I thought, and they will be familiar images to everyone here, I suspect. So here you go, Mother by Ted Kooser. Mid-April already, and the wild plums bloom at the roadside, a lacy white against the exuberant, jubilant green of new grass and the dusty, fading black of burned-out ditches. No leaves, not yet. Only the delicate star-petaled blossoms, sweet with their timeless perfume. You've been gone a month today and have missed three rains and one night-long watch for tornadoes. I sat in the cellar from 6 to 8 while fat spring clouds went somersaulting, rumbling east. Then it poured, a storm that walked on legs of lightning, dragging its shaggy belly over the fields. The meadowlarks are back, and the finches are turning from green to gold. Those same two geese have come to the pond again this year, honking in over the trees and splashing down. They never nest, but stay a wake or two, then leave. The peonies are up, the red sprouts burning in circles like little birthday candles. So for this month is a month as my birth, as you know, the best month to be born in, thanks to you. Everything ready to burst with living. There will be no more new flannel nightshirt sewn on your old black singer, no birthday card addressed in a shaky but businesslike hand. You asked me if I would be sad when it happened, and I am sad. But the iris I moved from your house now hold in the dusty dry fists of their roots, green knives and forks as if waiting for dinner. As if spring were a feast, I thank you for that. Were it not for the way you taught me to look, to see the life at play in everything, I would have to be lonely forever. The second one is called Spring Plowing. One of its virtues is it's far briefer. It also reflects some of the, well, at least one of the principles of the UUs, that is that things are interconnected. In this poem, the speaker imagines field mice moving from a plowed field to the relative safety of a fence line. Spring plowing. West of Omaha, the freshly plowed fields steam in the night like lakes. The smell of the earth floods over the roads. The field mice are moving their nests to the higher ground of fence rows. The old among them crane out to the owls to take them all. The paths in the grass are loud with the squeak of their carts. They keep their lanterns covered. Thank you.
Well, thanks to everyone for all of those wonderful stories and poems and songs. And now to the program, Why We Need Spring. Psychologically, spring provides us with a welcome relief from the cold darkness that winter can provide. No longer is there a significant threat of snowfall, I wrote that. So, Hang on a minute. I'm here to change something there. No longer do the ground, trees, and sky consist mostly of browns and grays. The first peaks of spring begin early with daffodils and crocuses, which we have daffodils blooming in the back, and continue with daylilies and pansies. Eventually, the prairie takes on the colors of the rainbow with flax, wild violet, redbud, and dandelion beginning to bloom. We all depend on these bright shows of color to shake off the cold dreariness of winter. So, why do we need spring? Spring renews our sense of wonder with the newly awakened colors that begin to surround us. Those colors directly affect our psyche, letting our minds drift off, free of the burdens of life, if only for a little while.
What is spring? So taking a purely scientific approach to this question, here's the answer. Spring in the northern hemisphere is the approximate 3 months between the spring equinox, when the tilt of the Earth's axis is inclined neither way, neither away from nor towards the sun, and up to the ending at the summer solstice, when the Earth's northern latitudes are inclined fully towards the sun. Even more technically, it is when the plane of the Earth's equator passes the center of the sun. At that instant, the tilt of the Earth's axis neither inclines away from nor towards the sun. Now, apparently from the Latin, it is the moment when the time of light and dark are equal, thus equus noct, or something like that. Here, again, in North America, we experience the days growing longer, temperatures generally climbing. Spring storms bring rain, wind, and sometimes extreme weather. Of course, as Mark pointed out, on a day like today, if you did not know the calendar date was March 23rd and you looked out your front door in Manhattan, Kansas, you might not say it is spring. And of course, for us, the old adage of the plains dwellers is certainly true. If you don't like the weather, just wait a few minutes. Okay, so the Earth is tilted. But how did it get that way? The prevailing theory is that about 4 billion years ago, when the Earth and the solar system were just beginning to cool, a rogue planet, which is a planet that doesn't belong to a solar system, called Theia, hit the Earth at a 45-degree angle. This knocked off a huge chunk of the Earth out into space, which eventually formed the moon. This also tilted the Earth by 23.5 degrees. Okay, this whole equinox thing, unlike the weather, is very, very predictable. Okay, for all intents and purposes, in our existence and that of our very ancient human ancestors, it's been happening this way for a heck of a long, long time. Now, I'm a biologist, and I'm always reminded that despite what the temperature is, the amount of precipitation, the relative humidity, maybe the barometric pressure, that almost every animal and plant in this world that we live in, they are adapted to doing the right stuff, such as sprouting their buds, laying eggs, looking for mates, during the right season, spring. And most all of them are adapted to having these annual life cycles cued by the day lengths. It's highly predictable. To paraphrase a mythical little orphan girl with curly hair, the sun will come up tomorrow. And with regard to spring, it'll stay up longer every day. So if the Earth's axis was not tilted, we would have no seasons, no spring. Life would be pretty dull, right? But there's more to it than science for us humans. Why do we need spring?
Of the many images that come to mind when we think of springtime, one brings forth more wonder and amazement than most others, the hummingbird. With a family of hummingbirds, one of the family of hummingbirds has the smallest bird on the planet, he doesn't visit this part of the world, but they're pretty tiny anyway. And interestingly, hummingbirds are also the only birds that can fly backwards. The species that we consider our local variety, the ruby-throated hummingbird, displays an iridescence that flashes the colors of the rainbow as quickly as these little birds can change direction. Although their arrival and persistence throughout the summer is well known by me, I'm always amazed the first time I see one in the spring. I think, what's that giant moth doing around my flowers? And then when I turn away and turn back, the little bird is gone. It always turns out to be a hummingbird. One of these days I'll get it. I will realize that it's not just a moth. Hummingbirds know when the real spring truly arrives. They won't travel to northern latitudes such as ours until the temperatures are sufficient for their favorite flowers to bloom. And actually, as of this morning, or actually as of about 5 days ago, bird watchers only as far north as central Arkansas had spotted these little jewels. So take heed, it's not spring until the hummingbirds say it's spring, and they haven't said it's spring yet. So a couple short poems, very short poems about hummingbirds. Oh, by the way, I've got a thing about hummingbirds just there and a painting in my house, so not sure why, but they just are really fascinating to me. The first poem is called Trochodile, and that's the family name for hummingbirds. As winter's sting so staunchly clings, and holds new birth at bay, a daffodil with iron will breaks through the warming day. The sweetest smells entice, propel these small Trochilidae. Impassioned wings salute the spring with iridescent sway. The second poem is just simply titled Hummingbird and is by Ryan Downham. I swear I will hum to the beat of the hummingbird's wings. I will listen and let my ears take in the humming of nature. The hummingbird dances in spring, then drinks the nectar of summer, flies through the crisp autumn air, and slumbers through winter. Nestled against the frozen flower, thawing out when spring leaps back, the hummingbird still clutching tight the petals of life. So why do we need spring? We'll try to answer that again. Without spring, hummingbirds would not grace our skies. We would never observe their brilliance and the amazing aerial displays of these tiny creatures. And let's not forget that hummingbirds are also pollinators. Their importance to us is growing as populations of other pollinating species are in trouble and in decline.
Okay, I have a final reading before we open it up to spring into discussion, so to speak. This reading is titled The Spring Beauty, and it is a Chippewa story from the Red Indian Fairy Book by Frances Jenkins Olcott, published in 1917. The Story of the Spring Beauty. An old man was sitting in his lodge by the side of a frozen stream. It was the end of winter, the air was not so cold, and his fire was nearly out. He was old and alone. His locks were white with age, and he trembled in every joint. Day after day passed, and he heard nothing but the sound of the storm sweeping before it the new-fallen snow. One day, while his fire was dying, a handsome young man entered the lodge. His cheeks were red, his eyes sparkled. He walked with a quick, light step. His forehead was bound with sweet grass, and he carried a bunch of fragrant flowers in his hand. "Ah, my son," said the old man, "I'm happy to see you. Come in. Tell me your adventures and what strange lands you have seen. I will tell you my wonderful deeds and what I can perform. You shall do the same, and we will amuse each other." The old man then drew from a bag a curiously wrought pipe. He filled it with mild tobacco and handed it to his guest. They each smoked from the pipe and then began their stories. "I am Peboan, the spirit of winter," said the old man. "I blow my breath, and the stream stand still. The water becomes stiff and hard as clear stone. I am Siguan, the spirit of spring, answered the young man. I breathe, and flowers spring up in the meadows and woods. I shake my locks, said the old man, and the snow covers the land. The leaves fall from the trees, and my breath blows them away. The birds fly to the distant land, and the animals hide themselves from the cold. I shake my ringlets, said the young man, and the warm showers of soft rain fall upon the earth. The flowers lift their heads from the ground, and the grass grows thick and green. My voice recalls the birds, and they come flying joyfully from the southland. The warmth of my breath unbinds the streams, and they sing the songs of summer. Music fills the groves wherever I walk, and all nature rejoices. And while they were thus talking, a wonderful change took place. The sun began to rise. A gentle warmth stole over the place. Pibuan, the spirit of winter, became silent. His head drooped, and the snow outside the lodge melted away. Siguan, the spirit of spring, grew more radiant and rose joyfully to his feet. The robin and the bluebird began to sing on the top of the lodge. The stream murmured past the door, and the fragrance of opening flowers came softly on the breeze. The lodge faded away, and Pibuan sank down and dissolved into tiny streams of water that vanished under the brown leaves of the forest. Thus, the spirit of winter departed, and where he melted away, the Indian children gathered the first blossoms, fragrant and delicately pink, the modest spring beauty.
The beginning of spring, the spring equinox, brings the pagan celebration of Ostara. It is traditionally a day of equilibrium, neither harsh winter nor merciless summer, and is a time for childish wonder. It's considered the pagan Easter, and they celebrate with painted eggs, baskets of flowers, are generally used to decorate the home. It's commonly used as a time to free yourself from things that hinder progress. As a day of equilibrium, it is also a good time to perform banishings and also perform workings of gain to things that we have lost or to gain qualities we wish to have. In Christianity, most of us recognize that spring equinox is a time of passion, crucifixion, and resurrection of Jesus. The Christian holiday Easter also occurs early spring of every year. Ugadi is the New Year's Day for the people of the Deccan region of India, which is the southern region, plateau area. The name Ugadi or Ugadi is derived from the Sanskrit word yuj, which means age, and adi, which means beginning, the beginning of a new age, literally. It falls on a different day every year because the Hindu calendar is a lunisolar calendar. The Saka calendar, which is called, begins with the month of Chaitra, which is March or April, or the equivalent of our March or April, and Ugadi marks the first day of this new year. These are just a few of the rituals, I'm sure, thousands and thousands of rituals that occur in celebration of the spring equinox. So today we've attempted to answer, to some degree or another, why do we need spring? We need it to provide the renewal of our spirit after a cold, dark winter. It brings color to our world in the flowers we grow for ourselves and those that Mother Nature provide us for free out on the prairie. The migrating hummingbird returns to its home, helping to pollinate our flowers while bringing wonder, amazement, and joy with it. And Siguan arrives, shaking his ringlets, bringing cool rains, warm breezes, and lush grass. So that's why we need spring. We do have a few minutes for discussion. And does anybody have anything to share about spring or spring rituals, the equinox, the science, the psyche of spring?
I have a
If you would wait for Yep.
Okay. I have a poem to share that's written by my friend George Martin. He is a poet out of Ellenwood, Kansas. If you don't know me, I'm B. Lanning, but I'm only reading this, okay? And I think it's real particularly good for today. Watching for the coming. A gentle snow in March raises aggression in my heart. Fear that spring is somehow stopped and will not meet my need for resurrection. I glare upon the falling crystals as though they were stabbing daggers, menacing my need for bright and warming days. I need another spring. It will come as light increases. It will. But I want it no later than the day after yesterday, and no default by snow. George Martin.
Awesome.
This is Langston Hughes. He's more famous than your poet, but I'm not sure it's better. In time of silver rain. In time of silver rain, the earth puts forth new life again. Green grasses grow and flowers lift their heads, and over all the plain the wonder spreads of life, of life, of life. In time of silver rain, the butterflies lift silken wings to catch a rainbow cry, and trees put forth new leaves to sing and joy beneath the sky when spring and life are new.
Harriet, no, okay, my thoughts are less esoteric, but I just remember discovering that world that Bob Patterson in his poem read about the mice having their little tunnels through the grass. Growing up in Iowa, I think we had bluegrass pastures or something. We didn't have the big blue stem that was left over the winter that the mice could make their little tunnels through. It just looked like a little fairyland that little people could crawl through. I just remember discovering that. It was unique.
My name is Ron Parks. I do appreciate the work that went into this morning's service and the idea of having a participation in, I think, a very significant, a very elemental ritual of passage into spring. So thank you for making that accessible. One of the anticipated events that I always enjoy took place this week, in that when I was driving Wednesday morning, I think it was March 19th on Kimball, headed east after Mark Mosher's Tai Chi class, I saw species drifting slowly northward just to the west of the football stadium area, and that was the turkey vulture. And the turkey vulture is I've been watching for the turkey vulture for the last 15 years or so. In the spring, its first appearance, the earliest in my very unofficial, unscientific observation is March 13th, and the latest is March the 21st. So this year, the turkey vulture showed up on the 19th, and that always gives me a lift to see that black form with not such a good reputation among some circles anyway make its appearance. It's really nice. There is a species that did not appear, and this is always a reoccurring theme with me and many others I know, but there, at one point there was a large black bird with this more or less similar function as a turkey vulture, and that's the raven. And Kansas did have ravens, particularly during the intense bison hunting period from the mid-1850s to the mid-1870s, thousands and thousands of ravens. Those were more or less exterminated. There occasionally might be a raven that'll drift through in extreme southwest Kansas, but the ravens are no more. They're not here to share one more spring with all the other species.
Any other takers? Well, I have a very short thing to recall about spring. I was born and raised in Los Angeles, California, where it's always spring. It's almost never anything other than spring, actually. Down near Los Angeles, fairly close to the water, you experience that Mediterranean climate. When we were 10 years or so, I was born and raised there until I was 10. When I was 10, we moved here in September. And I began to experience something other than spring, and that was fall. And then winter came, and I was very surprised that it snowed, even not in the mountains. We used to go up in the mountains and see snow, but what's this? I know we're not in the mountains because I can almost see Colorado from here. So when spring arrived, I thought, well, this is more like it. And if as long as spring always arrives, I can probably deal with the weather in Kansas. So we do have closing music this morning, and Michaela Sievers is going to treat us with a tune called The Flowers That Bloom in Spring by Arthur Sullivan. And finally, I'd like to leave with you with a very short reading from the poet Pablo Neruda. This was Kathy's, one of the things she suggested, and I really think I like it. You can cut all the flowers, but you cannot keep spring from coming. That's it. Go forth and enjoy spring when it returns.